another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.
Hi folks, this is Jack Spirko and another edition of the Survival Podcast. Today's podcast is entitled Lessons from New Orleans, as in Hurricane Katrina. And, you know, that was quite a few years ago. We're over 3 years since Katrina made landfall in New Orleans and caused all the damage and the widespread chaos that resulted, and people were blaming everybody involved, from FEMA and George Bush all the way down to local Louisiana officials, and I guess everybody did have a little bit of that blame coming. But why now? Why will we be talking about this in June of 2008? Is there anything else we can talk about? There's plenty of other things we can talk about. The reason I'm going to fall back on Katrina is because it so perfectly illustrates what happens to a reasonably well-run society as soon as the rules are off the table, and as soon as people go into desperation and need. And I don't think many people realize how catastrophic of an event Katrina really was within the city of New Orleans in the aftermath, because there's some agitating factors here that I think it's overlooked. And I'm going to kind of go through some of these things about Katrina and New Orleans with you. The first thing you really have to understand about Hurricane Katrina is that most people did leave. I think we're under this false impression that there were just millions of people sitting around and no one left and there was no evacuation. The majority of people did leave. Most people were told, hey, you got to get out. There's government provided methods to get out, or you find your own way out, but get out. And most people actually did that. Now, here's the other side of that. Most of the first responders, the firemen, the police, and what have you, they didn't leave. They stayed behind. What this means is, after the storm was over and they were dealing with the flooding and the aftermath and the damage and everything else, there were actually more first responders available per person than there were before the disaster. It's not like there was one cop like with a Barney Fife badge running around trying to restore order among 2 million people. There were a lot of first responders around. They just couldn't really get to anybody because the streets were flooded, because the vehicles wouldn't run, because many of the vehicles had been damaged, because some of them were hurt, some of them were injured. And they just couldn't get out to the people. The first responders were still there. That's something most people don't realize. Then the other thing is, the biggest shortages, the thing that caused all the real problems, were food and water. I mean, when it came right down to it, the reason people were willing to kill each other, the reason that people were stealing from each other, and there was some looting and all going on, but most of it was over food and water. See, in a flood, all the water around you is useless. It becomes putrefied, infected, and toxic, and you can't drink it. You can't use it. There's no electricity. There's no power. Nothing. Everything's wet. Nothing will burn. So you can't even boil it. You're stuck with this stagnating, stinking, rotting water that spreads disease, and you don't have any fresh water because the fresh water won't run. And even what does has been backed up into by the floodwaters. So there's no water. And then there's no food. You can't go to the store because the store's been destroyed. And the water's gone into the store. Alright? So we have to realize that the fundamental big issue for people in New Orleans after the storm was a lack of food and water. It was that simple. The next thing you really need to understand is that there was a total breakdown in law and order within the city. We had to send National Guard troops in eventually to put down some guys who were basically just sniping people. As soon as there weren't police that could easily respond to situations, and as soon as there was a need beyond that which a person could easily fulfill for themselves, you had a complete breakdown of law and order, and you couldn't call a cop, you couldn't dial 911. And if you were lucky enough to have some food, to have some water, there was a good chance that somebody was going to come along take it away from you unless you had a means to defend yourself. Then you have to realize that once law enforcement did kind of get their act together, National Guard came in and restored order, the first thing they actually did was go after the law-abiding citizens. Many people don't know this. If you go to YouTube, type in New Orleans Katrina guns confiscation, something like in that vein, or gun confiscation Hurricane Katrina, you'll find videos about how the Constitution was circumvented and that law enforcement organizations went in and took guns away from law-abiding people who were defending their homes. And I don't mean law-abiding people defending their homes or sitting on their roof with a gun. I mean people that they knocked on the door. Do you have any guns? You have guns in here? Give us your guns. That happened. The Supreme Court had to step in and fix that. And fortunately, despite how elitist and left-wing our court system seems sometimes, the NRA got the job done there, and these people stopped having their guns seized, and most of them got their guns back. But at a time when people were the weakest, and the few people that had, for whatever reason, either chose to or had to stay behind, actually had, you know, set up where they had food, water, reserves, and then they had guns so they could defend what they had, our government went in and took it away from them. While there were people still out there stealing and robbing, they were worried about taking guns away from people that were actually survival-minded, that had actually done the right things, the things that they really needed to do to get the job done. And that's kind of scary when you think about that. Now, the other thing we need to realize is the neighboring cities were really overwhelmed by the evacuees. Up where I live in the Dallas area, we weren't, I wouldn't say overrun, but we really kind of had a strain with trying to find places for all these people to go. Down in Houston, they filled up their baseball stadium and other places with people because they just had no place to put them. This was one major city, all right? And the people that did evacuate ended up spreading into major metropolitan areas, many of them that were not very, very far away. I mean, if you think of Dallas to New Orleans, it's about 500 miles. Dallas to Houston, or New Orleans to Houston, is around 250. All right, so I mean, these guys didn't go very far. If it would have been a bigger disaster, you have to think about where would people have gone then? How many more people would have branched out? You just really have to start thinking about this. You also have to realize that most of the nation was not directly affected, and that has a huge impact. If we think about a situation where maybe most of the nation or half of the nation would be affected by something that could occur. The reason that's so important, and people just don't get this, okay, yes, New Orleans was bad, but FEMA could set up operations and the other government organizations and volunteers could set up operations just outside the city in relatively calm, stable environments, have a base of operations to move in and out of the city to get people out, to get supplies in. All right? That's because it was a localized disaster. Had this been a bigger disaster, a more widespread disaster, that base of operations wouldn't be there. And as a survival-minded individual, you have to think about the fact that, yes, what you prepare for first is that local or regional disaster, because it's what's most likely to happen. But that's the kind of disaster that we're accustomed to dealing with in this country. A local or regional disaster where there are safe places just outside of the area where the disaster has occurred, where help and aid can be coordinated and rendered from. If you go nationwide, we won't have that. Then it's all like New Orleans. Or if you remember Hurricane Andrew, almost, I guess, close to 20 years ago now, that hit Homestead Air Force Base in South Florida, it's all Homestead Air Force Base. It's all New Orleans. Everything is wiped out. Everything is in turmoil. And there isn't that safe place. To me, that's the biggest lesson that we should be taking out of Hurricane Katrina, then Hurricane Rita later, that hit the South Texas and South Louisiana landscapes. That these disasters were really, they looked like huge disasters on television, but when you look at the land area that was directly affected and compare that to even, let's say, an area the size of the entire state of just Texas, let alone the rest of the United States, it's a relatively small portion of our nation that was directly affected. And we need to think about if it sends this kind of turmoil into our nation, then what's going to happen if we have something like an economy that's driven into the ground due to peak oil, which is something that is, it's not improbable at all to expect that to happen in the next 10 years. As you know, I'm not big on predicting dates. I can tell you that we could really have problems the next 5 years. It could be 10 years. It could be 20. But sooner or later, we're going to have that problem. We're going to deal with this issue. Our nation's in massive debt. We're borrowing about $1 billion a day. Borrowing $1 billion a day to pay the interest on the debt that we have. When you pay your personal income tax today, about 60% of personal income tax is used just to pay interest on our debt. I mean, sooner or later, there has to be a complete downturn of the economy. There has to be the type of thing that sets off riots. And if you again, you look at any of these situations, the L.A. riots, you look at the Homestead Andrew hit in South Florida, you look at Hurricane Katrina, you look at any of these disasters that occurred, and you see that little, it looks huge on TV, but it's really a microcosm. Now think about that taking place all over the United States. That's one of the big lessons that we've got to learn here. Another thing that we have to realize is the government didn't refuse to help. I mean, we heard all the people bashing George Bush. George Bush doesn't care about people in Louisiana. People made it racial. People made it all different things. Here's the reality. The government tried to help. They did what they could to help. They dropped the ball, and they took too long to get there in certain places. But even after they got there, it was still that they were more overwhelmed than anything else. They didn't have the resources. They didn't have the ability to just help everybody and fix it in a couple days. It didn't work that way. New Orleans is still in recovery from one hurricane. And they still have problems, and they still have additional criminal activity because of one hurricane. They've had parts of their city destroyed to the point where they may never come back. One hurricane. And that's why, even though people tried to help, there were volunteers, people gave money, people did whatever they could to help, and our society did care, and our government did care. We can blame the government for a lot of things, and they do get a lot of blame. And I'm not an advocate of the government, as you may well know, but inside the government, individual people at all levels, and people in situations that are drastic like that, genuinely do try to help each other. I mean, there are the 10% of society is kind of the bad element of society. The other 90% try to help. And there were people in FEMA. There were people at the local levels. There were people in the governor's office. There were people from George Bush down that tried to help and simply couldn't get the job done because it was such a massive number of people that were incapacitated. It was such a massive land area that had been destroyed. And least we forget that people all the way over into Beaumont, Texas, and all the way over into southern Alabama and Mississippi were devastated by this thing too. And it was more than just New Orleans. But the reality is, it could have been a lot worse. And that's the big lesson for you. In any of these disasters that we've had this far, they could always be worse. And that's what we need to think about when we're making our planning. So I know I haven't given you a lot of solutions in today's podcast, but, you know, we do one every day. So occasionally I'm going to just kind of try to wake you up to the real need and a real understanding to make sure that you're prepared for these types of emergencies and or disasters. We could have a catastrophe strike the entire nation or a region at any time. And what you have to realize is that wherever you live, the odds that something could happen where you're at are the same as the odds that something could happen in New Orleans. And people would look at that and say, you're crazy, New Orleans is in the Gulf, it's in the path of hurricanes. Everybody knew that eventually if a hurricane hit that there was going to be massive flooding and the city would be underwater. And God knows they're below sea level at all, and that's all true. But think about this. For over 100 years, nothing that devastating happened in New Orleans. New Orleans went along just like Boise, Idaho, and Jacksonville, Florida, and Los Angeles, California, and everybody else. But if you look at any place where there was major disasters, they generally have very long periods of time where there were no disasters. And it's important to understand that, you know, an unpopular court decision could be made in your city. A disease or infection could occur in your city that, you know, maybe ends up being a pandemic around the world, but starts where you're at, and you're the first one to start having to deal with it. There are things that can go wrong. And New Orleans to us should be just a microcosm that begins to drive home to us how inept the government will be at helping us when these things happen. Not because they don't want to, not because they're evil, not because of the United Nations conspiracy with the Illuminati or any kind of thing like that or any conspiracy theorist, simply because of the size and the scope. There's just not enough manpower, there's not enough resources, and there's not enough money to handle things. If Katrina had been something that did the same type of damage to a land area twice the size or three times the size that it did, think about how hard that would have been to manage. Think about it, if that wouldn't have been a storm that hit a city the size of New Orleans, what if it had just hit Houston? Houston's a much bigger city in population and size, and it's also much more important to the overall economy of the United States. We get a storm a bit like Katrina that hits Houston and damages our refineries, you'll see $8 a gallon gas. Think about that. So these are the lessons that I took from Hurricane Katrina. They might be a little bit different than some of the lessons you've heard from others. And remember, this podcast is not just about me. It's about you, too. If you have suggestions for improvements, if you have subjects you'd like me to go into, if you have ideas, even if you'd like to be a guest. I don't know how I'm going to work that out just yet with guests because, as you know, this podcast is done on a daily basis during my 50-mile commute every day. That's why there's some background noise. I'm looking at some ways to improve that with some better recording equipment in the near future. So I hope everybody out there is getting prepared. And remember, at the Survival Podcast, our goal is to help you figure out how to live the kind of life you want to live, whether times get tough or even if they don't.
Makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter because it all gets spent.